On October 4th, 1961, the now infamous comedian Lenny Bruce was arrested outside the Jazz Workshop in San Francisco on charges of obscenity. Bruce had used the word cocksucker on stage in a joke that kicked off the first of many arrests for similar charges. One time it was for using the word schmuck on stage. I know, I couldn't believe it either, but yeah. He said schmuck. I mean, we've got a 2010 movie called Dinner for Schmucks starring Steve Carell and Paul Rudd, and this guy was in the back of a police cruiser for just saying the word during his act. I invited Drew Drevyanko and Stuart Fullerton, two young comics hustling their way through the open mics and independently produced comedy shows of the New York comedy scene, to chill out with me for a bit in my blanket fort. These two have what it takes to make it, in my humble opinion. They eat, sleep, and breathe their craft. Drew runs a cool little show Tuesday nights in Brooklyn. Stuart hosts a hilarious celebrity gossip podcast called Stayin' Humble with Stu, and they're really doing it, and it's all good. I dabbled in comedy a bit when I lived in New York, and I quickly stopped because I saw early on that this was not some hobby I could pursue for fun on the side. This was a form that demanded an all-in time commitment if I were to ever become any good at it at all. So I backed all the way off, content to remain a fan. I talked to Stuart and Drew about the racket of thrift stores in Brooklyn and about my quote-unquote allergy to caffeine, but mostly I talked to them about the current state of comedy and the relationship between comedians and their audience. These days, everyone from Dave Chappelle to Aziz Ansari seems to have a hot take on the current dilemma comedians face in the wake of the Me Too movement and the emergence of cancel culture on social media. Comedians feel unsure of where the line is or where the line should be, if there should be a line at all. They feel unsafe in their hallowed performance halls, lest some attention-seeking whistleblower in the audience should livestream them making a joke that the online community deems cancel-worthy. But I mention Lenny Bruce because I can't help but wonder, is this really a new phenomenon? Or has it always been like this? Has comedy always been a form that, by its very nature, exposes itself to the wrath of the pearl-clutching masses ready to take a stance in the name of decency against using certain words or insinuating that certain things could ever be, in any context, considered funny? Surely even Shakespeare had his fair share of erudite patrons fainting in the aisles at his grotesque amount of dick jokes. Personally, I think that almost anything is in bounds given the right context. For a comedian, that context to me would be that the comedian understands the topic they are talking about and that they talk about it in a way that is just undeniably, genuinely funny. But honestly, I don't know. Maybe there are certain things that just simply never should be joked about. The rebel in me always wants to spray paint a massive fuck you on every sacred cow in the lexicon, but the progressive in me wonders if, perhaps, that is tied to my baser instincts, and that a smarter, wiser, more compassionate kind of comedy doesn't need to be so intentionally antagonistic. Maybe it's just a matter of punching up versus punching down. Say whatever you want, just make sure you aren't saying it from an elevated position. I don't think I'll figure it out in this lifetime, but that's never stopped me from trying. So, from a blanket fort recording studio in my North Hollywood apartment, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to my friends Drew Drevyanko and Stuart Fullerton about comedy. All right, you guys, long intro short, I'm in the blanket fort today with Stuart and Drewert from New York City, two New York comedians. that are here visiting, my friends. I mean, my old friend Stuart and my new friend Drew,
Which one do you like better, Drew, probably?
I'm going to save that for the postmortem. So you'll have to listen. You'll have to listen to the show and hear what I say afterward, where I score you both. And I talk about, like, whose comedy I liked more, because I've been able to watch you both do your thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
In town for the Burbank Comedy Festival.
Woo!
Performing at Flappers. This is not a plug, because by the time this airs,
it won't be,
it's going to be over. But you're staying on our air mattress.
Great air mattress.
It's a great air mattress.
I think we keep upping our Airbnb game, and like we're getting pretty good.
Oh my God. We showed up and there was chocolates on the pillows. Full comforter. You know when you stay at someone's house and they don't have a full bed set for you?
We have extra towels you can sleep in.
Yeah, they're like, here's a blanket and here's a couch. You guys have full sheets. Not only a fitted sheet, but
the fitted sheet was clutch,
plus a comforter, plus fans on me at every point. There was a rose on the pillow. There was chocolates. Great, great work.
Room service.
5 stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. 5-star Airbnb.
All right. Awesome. I mean, we might start one up illegally in the house I think our landlord thinks we're running an Airbnb because he's caught us a few times when people have come over to stay.
Yeah.
And he'll, like, come up, like, because he, like, hears people confused about how to get in.
Does he live in here?
He lives right downstairs.
Oh,
and so
okay.
He'll come up and he'll kind of knock on the door, and we open the door and there's like people unpacking their suitcase and there's like an air mattress, and he looks at us kind of like, what's going on?
Wait, he'll knock on the door?
Because he hears, because usually people don't know how to get up. They don't know where we, so they'll be kind of rummaging around down there and he hears, you know, and then he comes up to be like, is everything okay? And even the other day he came out because I was bringing in this divider and it dropped and it made a big clanging noise.
Oh.
And he came out and he goes, what are you doing? And I went, oh, I just bought this divider and I'm bringing it in. He goes, what's the divider for?
What?
And so I'm like, this guy is
too much.
He thinks that I'm running an Airbnb, because he's like instantly like, why do you need a room divider? Like, what, you know? But I was fast on my feet, and I was also honest. I said, well, I record out of my apartment and I'm trying to make.
Why would he care?
I know. I think that he's trying to.
That's definitely why.
He's trying to catch us. He's trying to. But hey, you know, I mean, we are going to have guests over from time to time, and we keep getting better at it.
Yeah.
And when we started out, we didn't have anything. And, and now I'm like, hey, if we're going to have people over, we should have a comforter. It's not as nice as our comforter.
Yeah.
We're going to have sheets. Said, not as nice as our sheets.
Yeah.
We're still going to like let our guests know who's boss. We're going to kind of like.
Yeah. Like we don't have a mosquito net and you guys do.
Uh-huh, like you have to just deal with it.
Yeah.
We leave some off bug spray next to the bed.
Right.
But, yeah. Yeah, cool. All right. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you today about, I sort of want to talk a little bit about what we've been talking about this week, like the state of comedy as you see it, because you spend a lot of time in clubs, at mics, with comics. You're very immersed in the scene, and you're very much so like out there hustling, doing it, like mad respect. But I'm a big fan. I'm a big appreciator and a big fanboy of comedy. And I think most people in the world notice that right now we're in a
shift.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Not so much a moment as a shift. And I guess a moment too. But it's been a moment that's been going on for a few years now. And it may have been kickstarted by Me Too. It may have been going on a little before then.
Yeah.
But you're definitely seeing a shift in a conversation about what can comics say or not say, what qualifies as smart comedy or smart shock humor if you are going to be offensive versus what's just you're an uninformed asshole.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You know? Totally. Oh my God, there's so much to say. I mean, even being like we live in New York, and now that we're in LA, it's people the first thing people always say is like New York is more like joke based, while LA is more kind of performance based with their comics.
And story based.
And story based. And it kind of, I mean, I didn't want to truly believe that, but it kind of is true from a lot of the comics I've seen on here. And like they're great and they kill, but it's just they're more like they'll tell an 8-minute story if they have 8 minutes on a show instead of like New York is kind of more like.
How many jokes can you pack into that?
Because in New York, the audiences, their attention spans are so short. You essentially just have to punch them in the face with jokes or else they're just bored. And so that's kind of like the way we were brought up. And it's kind of fun to come out here and do that. And you can tell when LA Comics, I think they think of it as like, whoa. Like, I remember someone, that girl last year said, she's like, yeah, New York, like, you guys can just tell because you guys are just like so joke based. And I'm like, look, I'm like, well, what else are you supposed to do?
Yeah,
you
know? Like, aren't we supposed to be doing jokes? New York, it's the absence, yeah. It's the absence of like a punchline a little bit. I do think people in LA have other stuff going on there. I mean, we have to work shitty jobs in New York. We're around people, like real people more that are like, I don't know. I've talked so much about like the difference between LA and New York comedy.
Would you say it's the difference between, I'm going to boil it down to a generalization, like the difference between like say Anthony Jeselnik would be New York, joke,
right,
and Mark Maron would be, I'm gonna tell you the story about this concert I went to with my friend,
yeah, totally.
I'm gonna tell you everything about what Keith Richards was doing on stage and why it made me feel, you know, feel old, because there's my hero Keith and he's look at him and I don't want to see
him. And it's so great and captivating, but like if you had 10 minutes in New York and you try to do that, I think the audience would just like fall asleep.
We also get so much less time.
So much less time.
Like, can't blow your spot on one story.
Yeah.
As we get punchline at the very end.
That's the thing. We had three
minutes.
We get three minutes at Mike's.
Yeah. Shows, we get 6 to 7 to maybe 10. We have to go to Philly to do 15 minutes.
Right.
Like, really.
Right.
Like, so it's, I do think we have less time. And in LA, it's not as like Mike. And even if you are doing the mics, they're 6-7 minutes sometimes. Like, they have longer mics, longer time. They'd probably do less mics. We probably do more mics, but they're less time.
Why do you think they give their comics more time on the West Coast than on the East Coast?
I truly think they just have more, like, they do more shows.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like starting in LA would mean doing, like, one mic a week and, like, one show a week. Whereas in New York, you do a mic every day,
sometimes,
and then hopefully
two
a day, mm-hmm. and then hopefully shows every night. Mm-hmm. And so I just think they have more time that way.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all, but I mean, even in within New York, if anybody cares about this, it's like the Brooklyn thing scene is much different than the Manhattan scene.
So actually, I actually wanted to touch on this a little bit because I've been thinking about this a lot, and this is, brings it back to like your state of comedy.
Right.
I have found just from watching LA Comics this past week, they like don't have Brooklyn here.
Right. Well, that's
So it's totally different. Like in Manhattan, we really have two different
Scenes. They don't have Brooklyn in LA.
Literally, they don't have Brooklyn. I haven't found a bagel in days.
Yeah, yeah.
But also,
I guess North Hollywood is kind of Brooklyn-y, but otherwise.
No. So Brooklyn audiences are really horrible, I think. They only laugh if like you're their friend. They only laugh if you're dressed cool.
Or if you're like talking about,
or
like,
if you're talking about Trump.
Number two pencils or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
or
which
if
is,
you're talking
I have
politics.
A great bit about it, but no. It's like,
you guys ever try to write a letter to Trump with a Dixon Ticonderoga? I'll tell you.
But I really do feel like in LA, there's not as much like racial discord here. Like, there's not as like there were so many people on my show at Flappers that were like telling jokes about Mexicans. And I was like, that's crazy to me. Like in New York, I could not tell a joke about a Mexican. Like, that's crazy.
I feel like that's a pretty LA thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Think, and everyone is laughing. And I think some of them probably were a little Mexican, like half Mexican or something like that. But like in New York, and
Los Angeles is actually a Mexican.
Yeah. And even like, Los Angeles. But even just like, I just feel like there's less racial discord here because I really do feel like everyone here is like on the same. There's a divide.
You think the presence of jokes about Mexicans means there's less racial discord? It means that relations are doing better because people are able to joke about it.
Yes, yeah.
And that it actually means there's more racial disharmony. So I think that's a really interesting point.
In New York, because there's this whole, I mean, the liberal elite has taken over New York. And they make you not want to laugh at other people. You know what I mean?
You're always
like, and I really do. I really do feel like comedians, and I also think this about musicians and actors and like everyone. Like, we are actually friends with people from all different walks of life more than like the people that are refusing to laugh at the joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
well,
like I ran this joke past my Black friend, and he said it was fine to say.
But only white people are going to be
But only white people are mad at me for saying it. You know what I mean? So,
it's
but I
so
actually
weird.
Do think you have a responsibility to yourself and art to like.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to piss anyone off.
Yeah. I don't think like it's good to tell jokes about Mexicans.
Well, speak for yourself, Buddy and I.
Depends on what kind of joke you're telling.
I just noticed it was like really, like in New York, you cannot tell a joke about another race unless it's like,
well, yeah,
insanely well written and like insanely worked out and like.
You think there's totally. There's a lot of white. I mean, there's a. I noticed in my time in New York that there's a lot of conversations about gentrification and about white people kind of invading POC spaces and things like that. So I definitely felt like there was always this kind of feeling of, you know, I got to make sure I'm behaving responsibly in this neighborhood that I'm not supposed to be in.
Exactly.
And that everyone sort of like low key wants to let me know, like, you shouldn't be here. You're kind of fucking up the neighborhood, you know, but like. So that's a really interesting point that it's not that New York comics are more respectful or more woke. It might actually be that
they're less woke.
That there's, and I thought about that too when I lived there. I thought for a place so diverse, it's really interesting.
It's really
the
divided.
The neighborhood breakdown where it's like, this is the Dominican neighborhood. This is the
This is the But like when you do shows at a club or something, the best shows are where there's a black couple in the front next to a Latino couple next to
white
a white
people
couple.
Are the worst audience members.
And it's like it's so much better when you're at a club and there's like a little some tourists from out of the country.
I think
there's
you
this.
Always get a better swath in Manhattan too.
Right, you
I
do.
Think you get a better mix.
And like that show is always. I mean, at least for my comedy, like I
better
do way
than
better
the
than
Brooklyn
there
show.
Than a coffee house in Brooklyn where everyone
kind of is laughing like this.
And they're laughing if their friend next to them is laughing. They're like, oh yeah, I guess I can laugh at that. And it's like, I
do think Manhattan is really appearance based too. Like you want to look, even just like the difference in the way people dress in Manhattan versus like LA, like in LA, everyone's wearing like flip flops, like chilling, you know, like they look nice. But in Manhattan, I just feel like we're all so buttoned up and like, everyone's like, you have to look like if you laugh at, you have to make sure everyone around you is laughing before you laugh at a joke.
Right.
Really.
Also, you're doing, it seems like you're probably doing shows in Brooklyn for locals, whether the locals be transplant locals or people who were actually born and raised in that neighborhood. Whereas Manhattan, you have a higher chance of doing shows for tourists who are looking for something fun to do that night. And they're going
to
pop into a comedy show.
And they're not going there to be offended by something.
Yeah, they're going out because they've got three nights in town and someone said there's a good comedy show at this little club in the East Village.
And like,
it's a total offended thing that like LA doesn't really have as bad as Manhattan.
Right.
Like, people here aren't really looking to get offended like they are in New York.
Maybe
that's because LA people are all hot and they just think about themselves and they don't really care what anyone else does. But
everyone's just got confidence.
It's working. That's what I. That's actually sort
of confidence here.
That's sort of what I think it is. I'm like, they're so self-involved that they don't even like care.
An illusion.
But I mean, you never know. But also, like, I think people in New York overthink everything.
Yeah, and I mean, there's. This is kind of speaking for myself here, but like when I do a thing in Brooklyn and maybe a joke that I love that is a little dark or something doesn't go well and it's just crickets, that, and you can tell the audience didn't like it because of whatever topic or something that hurt them. It's like now, in a weird way, I kind of want to piss them off with I want to almost double down.
Yeah.
And I want to tell my tag that's even worse than the first part. I'm like, whoever's listening is probably thinks I'm like the most offensive. I'm not at all.
No.
But like, it is fun to be like, oh, they got kind of pissed off at that. I'm like, I want to give them the tag just to piss them off even more. And it's like, that just says more about me. But like,
I mean, the goal is to do good in any way.
The goal is to do good. Yeah.
So
for
like,
sure.
You should be able to make Brooklyn people laugh and Manhattan people laugh. But that's why it's harder, a little harder.
That's what I think leads me into, like, what the next thing I want to talk about is, well, it's along the same line is, okay, so Brooklyn people seem to be more offended by than Manhattan people. New York people in general seem to be more offended than Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The question is it good that audiences are more... You know, is it a good thing that comedians
I think it
are
is
being
a little bit.
Asked to? So, like, Aziz has this new special where he talks about how he's like, "Hey, look, I have a special where I made fun of my chubby teenage nephew, or cousin," and he's like, "And it's a really famous bit. And is that a responsible bit for me to do about this teenage kid to like make fun of his physical appearance on stage in front of?"
I bet that kid lost a lot of weight and looks hot now, though.
He
so I think
it
was special.
He says that
I remember
special.
That bit. I love that bit.
Yeah,
it was so funny.
But
his cousin, like,
and
Clarence
so like,
or whatever.
We were all laughing collectively as a society at that bit, and now we're looking at it going, oh, you know, things that we all collectively loved, you can look back and go, is it okay that Jim is pursuing Pam for four seasons when she's married and like, and he should be, or when she's engaged to be married and he should just be backing off and like accepting that.
Yeah. This, you
know, is it, is, or, and I don't know. So the question is it a good thing that we're trying to look for more accountability overall, while it can be annoying and can be hard to make an audience laugh? Is it overall like, well, it's, or should comedy be a protected space where the rule is, hey, if it's funny, it flies, you know?
I think it's a good thing that we're checking in with ourselves. I just think if the people checking in have good intentions, that's what's good. If the people checking in just want to bring down comedians because they have no respect for comedy, that's bad.
And that's kind of their way. They have a platform,
yeah,
too.
And that's by, their, yeah. So yeah. I think anything that comes from a good place, like Aziz checking in, that's a good, like, step forward. Like, that's mm-hmm. great. Now, like, that... the Dina Hashim joke where she joked about XXXTentacion and like everyone freaked out, like that guy just kind of wanted to get his name out. You know, that is a bad place, right. You know? So
really quick, if people don't yeah. know about this, Dean, this,
So there was a comic, I'll just do it really quick. Yeah. There was a comic who did this show, this week at the Cellar. Comedians, they're like the top comedians right now, and they get about 1 minute, I think, to tell a joke, and they have to pick a topic from a list of things. Mm-hmm. So she had her topic that was,
so
she picked.
Like she even sat at home being like,
I know.
Here's what I'm going to say tonight, like all you XXXTentacion fans.
Her
like,
topic yeah. was the death of XXXTentacion. I cannot say that fucking name. And you know what? I've been saying it a lot, and the practice has not worked.
Yeah.
So... anyways, her topic was that. She made a really quick joke. I'm going to fuck up the joke, but pretty much she said he died and he had $50,000 of cash on him. And Dina said that would be a great ad for Venmo because you shouldn't be carrying $50,000 of cash. You should
which,
have Venmo'd
it. Which, if I'm not mistaken, was a thing he like used to brag about, that he was like, I roll with $50,000
yes.
on me, which is like, that. Well,
that's why he got murdered.
That's why he got
because
murdered.
People knew that.
And it is, that's a funny joke. Like, what
a great joke.
Ad for Venmo.
Great joke.
And it's also not something that she sat at home thinking, how can I torture the family of this
oh
guy?
My God.
I know.
It's not about him really so much as it is just about like the idea of rappers kind of stunting with this like
yeah
gaudy expressions of wealth. And then it's really not that deep either.
It's so just, basic.
It's
a joke about Venmo.
Level.
It's
yeah.
just it's
yeah.
about Venmo. Uh-huh. It's not about a guy. It's yeah. about carrying cash in Venmo. It's not
and,
about
and
anyone's
someone
death.
Someone sees it and goes, this is a great opportunity for me to have a platform by blowing up this chick. I'm gonna get to be Twitter famous
because
I'm going to be the one to blow the whistle.
Because I'm woke. And no, it's that. And it's also the wanting to prove so badly that you are better than other people by
right.
calling uh-huh. her, saying that she was bad. So his fans went nuts, death threats all over the place. Like they found out her mom's work address and were like showing up at her mom's work.
Mm-hmm.
It was insane. She didn't do comedy for like maybe a month after.
Yeah, it's like, but the thing is, these people aren't comedy fans. I mean, they're just... A real
comedy fan would see that.
What are you doing at the club?
Right.
But don't you think that, do you feel like as comics that you might live, I mean, I'm sure you do, but that you might live in an era where people go to comedy shows with the specific purpose of waiting till someone says something that they can go, I'm gonna sell this to TMZ.
For sure.
Like
or the, I'll tweet about it
I'm
at
gonna,
least.
Yeah, I'm and gonna blow like, this thing up. I'm gonna be the person to crack this.
Yeah.
Totally. And you really just have to trust that, like, you're going to continue to press forward. If you really did offend someone, you can apologize and do that correctly and then move on. I mean, there's every comic has a story where the internet tried to take them down.
Right.
Like, just means you're famous.
And I mean, I heard someone say recently, which made a lot of sense, it is an instinctual feeling to get offended by something. Someone says something you don't like and, you know, you can feel it in your gut. You're like, oh, that, I don't like that. But it's a different thing to tweet about it
uh-huh.
and to
yeah.
that's just asking for attention. And it's like, that is two totally different things. It's like, hey, if someone says something you didn't like, sure, we all hear that every day. But it's like to go on and tweet about it and to tag the person and to act like you're the hero.
And
maybe what have you
genuinely
said?
like, hey, people need to know about this popular person who people are giving money to and who's getting like endorsements and who's on TV. People should know this person said this shitty thing. But I feel like, oh, I just can't help but go, how are you divorcing the context of They set it at a comedy club because they're a professional comedy.
That's what it comes down to, is this comedy.
How are you
robbing
it of the essential context of, like, it's not like going, oh, did you know that the CEO of SoulCycle and of Equinox, no offense. It's not like going, like, this guy straight up, Stuart loves Equinox.
And I have something to say. I got a crazy email from Equinox today, and they're donating. You get to pick, when you check in now, you get to pick what donation you want your money going to.
Oh, wow.
They're, like, doing crazy PR.
But they straight up were in the Pride Parade and shit. Like, Equinox is, like, so about, like,
they're the epitome
of, like, capitalistic people being in the Pride Parade, like, oh, my God, like, we love
it. Which I'm obsessed with. Then, like, why was the NFL afloat at Pride? What have you ever done?
Yeah.
NYPD, painted their cars, like, Pride flag, or, like, a banner of Pride flags on the side of their cars. It's like...
Yeah, it's
I mean,
you know, I guess you can apologize for Stonewall, you know, 60 years later.
Right.
Oh, my God.
But the point is, it's different from seeing a comic do something and be like, this person who has all these fans and all these followers and all these people who support them, people need to know that they think this. It's like, well, no, they said that in a joke. They don't think that.
Obviously. If you're
That's
joking
a big
about it,
difference between, is- oh, the CEO of Chick-fil-A thinks it's like,
yeah,
donate right. to
that
this
is the
cause.
Biggest thing I wish people realized. It's like, if you are able to be a comedian, to be a jokester, you probably have had something horrible happen to you, or you've been dealing with, like, laughter through, like, horrible situations, and you feel so comfortable joking that you don't actually think that.
And you've had people say way worse things about you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
On stage and in your personal life, because that's what it is to be a
also,
comic.
Like, yeah. Let's go through your text messages and your emails to see the shit you've said, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's like stones from glass houses.
I love the lack of awareness of, the lack of humility from people who are so comfortable being like, oh, I'm going to call this out. I'm going to call out this bad behavior that I saw. And they're just so certain that it's never going to come
back. It's never going to come back. And it's always going to come back. It always comes back.
Or it doesn't. People, I mean, there are a lot of people who are making a living out of being, you know, a whistleblower.
But, like, you want to be the person to dig up someone's old tweet and try to ruin someone's career because you don't like, you want to be that person?
We realized, did you know you can search?
Advanced Twitter search, yeah.
It's called advanced Twitter search. So whenever people dig up these, like, comedians' tweets that are, like, bad, they're not fans of them that remembered that tweet from 20 years ago. They have gone on
advanced. They're specifically looking.
And they have typed in black people, Asian people, white people, like, you know, whatever.
They're on a hunt.
And my Twitter usually comes up first, and, you know.
No.
But no, you can type in.
I actually recently went into mine and deleted some old tweets. I had these crazy college. I would tweet all the time in college because I had, like, 7 followers, so no one would see. And I recently went through and deleted a lot, and they weren't bad. They were just really weird things about, like, my gay friends.
Uh-huh.
Like, they were really weird gay jokes that, like, I was acting as if I was a gay man tweeting, and that's not the case. Like, I am a straight white woman.
Right.
Like, and I can't.
It's just not worth having on there.
I was like,
but
yeah,
it's
like, it's
again,
not gay if you're on the freeway. Like, it's just weird. I mean, that's.
So here's what I like about people doing the deep dig, like doing, like, the dig of, like, 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Is, like,
yeah.
In the case of this Dina Hashim thing, it's you're robbing her of the context of it was at a show at the Comedy Cellar where she's given a topic.
She has a limited amount of time.
You're robbing her of the context of she said it on stage, you know. And in the deep dive example, where you deep dive on someone's Twitter, you're robbing them of the context of the entire era.
Everyone
when the
was
joke
doing
was
that.
Made,
oh, totally.
Like, and I know that you can't just go, oh, just because minstrel shows were a thing, everyone who did them, it's okay. It's like, but in a way, you cannot divorce events in history from their historical context. You cannot just go, and we talked about this the other night where I'm like, I think it's cool that we want to go, that Hannah Gadsby wants to say, you know what, fuck Picasso. Like, I know, we don't need to keep honoring Picasso. And I'm like, I agree with her that in 2019, we don't need to keep holding up the accomplishments of this guy who apparently was a notorious womanizer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I go, there's a little bit of something where it's like, can you divorce that from the historical context where being a womanizing, like, drunk wife beater was kind of just like being Joe Blow.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
I mean, to go back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years and start analyzing, like,
and who, be like,
I actually like to go back and, you know, I actually think Hitler was kind of a bad person. And I think
slow down,
to
slow
go
down.
Back.
I don't know.
Can we divorce what Hitler what did Hitler from the did, historical like, context? And I think that would be the argument that would be made on the other side. Is right. People would be like, oh, don't tell me that it's okay because it's what
yeah.
everyone was
no,
doing.
Yeah,
so obviously.
Of course.
But I think that...
No, everyone wasn't doing that. That was just Hitler, and then
yeah.
he made...
And he got a lot of Germans yeah. to go along with it.
There was one thing, one quick thing I wanted to say yeah. about like comics who... obviously are joking about this stuff. I did a few shows with this guy in Atlantic City, and then we went to Philly, and we were like, we had to do a lot of driving together. We didn't even know each other. And he has this, like, he had like a transgender bit, obviously very edgy, and it was very funny, very well thought out, and definitely would probably be offensive, you know? And, but then he was just completely out of, we were just like eating dinner, and he was just telling me this, this story about how he was on a plane like within a few months ago. And some guy, like some old guy from the South, flipped out because he didn't want to sit next to this trans person. And the comedian, who the one with the kind of offensive trans bit, was the one who was like, dude, fuck you. Like, I'll sit next to that person. And like call it, like literally screamed fuck you to this guy on this plane. And was like, Austin, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah,
that's a person.
In real life.
And it's like.
You come through.
And it's like, obvious. It's like, that's the kind of thing. It's like, yeah, this guy's a great guy who has a funny bit. And it's like the fact that someone who was just watching his bit on stage would think, could think this guy's horrible. How dare he? But it's like. Of course that guy
he's actually out
that.
There in the
it's
trenches.
Like,
that's every time like a comedian like has a joke about a different race. It's like we actually hang out with every different race.
Oh my
because
God, yeah.
We actually are at mics. We're grinding like or we're all going to be kind of shitty until we're you know big. We're all going to bring each other up. We're all going to you know
I
what I mean?
Feel
it's
like
more than anything.
Who see a comedian make a joke like a joke like what your friend had and they instantly and it's clearly a joke where the comedian is saying something they don't actually think.
Right.
They're saying something for the intent of the shock value, for the intent of the audience going, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. Like if you watched an Anthony Jeselnik special and the bit is he's going to say the worst things you can imagine saying. That's the bit. If you can't see that, I feel like you lack critical thinking skills.
And
I feel like you
and
lack
they do,
the ability.
And you really do.
You do. And that's the thing is like Anthony Jeselnik, old Sarah Silverman, like, they are legitimately playing a character.
When Sarah Silverman says, when God gives you AIDS, make lemonades.
Right.
She doesn't think AIDS is funny. She's if you can't understand that she's not a gay-hating bigot when she makes
right.
that joke.
She's like the wokest person ever.
If you can't have the critical thinking skills to go, she's doing a funny wordplay on something that like, and making it like this silly little rhyme
and
when it's
knows,
something that's so serious.
Who knows, maybe some person with AIDS like loves that joke. You know
that
what I mean?
It was so funny.
Like, because you have to laugh through that. You're literally dying. The government doesn't care about you. You have to laugh through that kind of stuff.
This is the distinction I think I've come up with. And you were talking about it earlier, that it's the intention that matters. And the intention of why people call people out, too. Where's your heart at? Like, what's the...
Yeah.
Because is your heart in the space of, I really feel like this is an important thing that people should know about? Or is your heart in the space of, I want to get attention? You know, I want to be seen, or I want to be the person to blow this person up, so I'm going to do a Google...
Advanced Twitter search.
I think it matters, this distinction, too, because I think we live in an age of, and I think this has contributed to this age, the internet troll.
Yeah.
Where there's such thing as people who exist online who are tweeting and commenting and messaging to people, quote-unquote, jokes. They're saying things that they think are funny that are intended to cause harm.
Yeah.
And so we live in this age where we're seeing people weaponize things that to them, the person sitting in their mom's basement, you know, at 3 a.m. is intending to hurt the feelings of the person.
Literally telling people to kill themselves.
Yeah,
and
hoping
absolutely.
And so I think because of that, it's fueled the fire of this idea in society that comedy is bad and that making jokes about people is bad.
Right.
And that saying things that are offensive about marginalized people especially or people who are at risk of feeling sad or depressed or people who were made fun of growing up is bad. So I think you have to make a delineation between a troll and a comedian. Because you could have a troll and a comedian say an almost identical joke. And I think that the biggest delineation is intention, because I think at the end of the day, the troll wants to cause harm, and the comedian wants to see you smile.
Yeah.
The comedian hopes that this thing that you feel sensitive about, that like you feel hurt about, you can find some relief and you can laugh about it. And that difference, I think, is so important to understand. That
I mean,
this person, one person's an entertainer who wants to see you laugh and smile, and the other person is a human piece of garbage.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
But unfortunately, it's all part of the same era right now, and it just all kind of...
I think it's going to come back down, though. I mean, comedy happens in waves. Like, when Joan Rivers got big, a lot of women started doing comedy, and then it kind of backed off. And then, like, this person, you know, like, comedy really does go in waves, and I think we just got to ride the wave, and it's going to get better, and just be mindful of what you say, and if it comes from a smart, funny place, like, in a good place, then it's a fine joke.
Oh, yeah, anything can be funny if it's smart and clever and funny. I mean, there's just anything. And that's really what it comes down to, is like, I've seen plenty of people say offensive things, and I love a good offensive joke, but I've seen people say it with just nothing behind it, and it's dumb.
Oh,
and you can tell that they're just saying it.
And like they're just saying it. And like, yeah, that pisses me off more than anything.
And it doesn't piss you off because it's offensive to the people. It probably is more offensive to you as a comedian.
Yeah, it's like, that was the worst written joke I've ever heard. And it's like,
how the fuck did you waste my time with that bullshit?
But yeah, so there's, I mean, it's a great feeling, I will say, to get people to laugh at something they know they don't want to be laughing at. It's the best feeling, where they're like, oh, but like you can see them laughing. You're like, that is perfect.
Yeah. Well, that's what I hope. If a comedian calls me out in the audience and is doing crowd work, and and they dig into something that I've been sensitive about since I was, 10 years old, my hope is that the joke's good enough that I bust a gut.
Yeah, totally.
And I just start going like, shit, that's funny. You know, like that person saw me and they happened to pull out the one thing that, you know.
Right. And that's, I mean, I'm let you do your thing.
And I'm sure that's their hope, too.
Right. Yeah. And that bleeds into the whole roast battle thing, of course. Oh, yeah. And like,
I watched these guys do a roast battle the other night, and I can't believe that this is a thing that people do.
It's like, crazy.
And that's, again, why it's like when people are like, these comedians don't understand. It's like, go to a roast battle and see what they say to each other. It's insane. Yeah. I mean, and then people even in roast battles sometimes will be like, ooh, that was harsh. And I'm like, did you hear everything else? Did you?
Yeah, it's.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It is really just, man, when you first start doing it, it's like, well, I might hate this, I might hate that. And then, like, after a few, you're like, I could give two fucks even what. They could say the worst thing, and I just still won't care. It's like, you do kind of just build up this.
You
like,
want to be kind of a little bad, but you do kind of have to. There's a fine line.
Oh, yeah. If somebody doesn't want something joked about, totally. And, like, I'll always respect that. And absolutely. Yeah.
But really, the worst thing that can happen is the joke doesn't land.
Right.
That's like
But also don't want to tell someone not to joke about something, because then it makes them want to do it more.
Right.
Oh, man.
But a lot of this stuff is healing for these people if they've had a tragedy and it's just been beaten to death now by so many comedians, where it's like, it's kind of their, like, that person's thing that you pick on. And I think it's definitely healing for some of these comics.
Oh, I love that.
It's certainly a relief from the garbage truckload of pity these people have been getting.
Oh,
right,
my
exactly.
God,
and like people, tiptoe around it because they're too afraid to say anything. It's like, dude, I don't care.
And you
know?
Have to like
the
force.
Droves of people that don't want to bring up the fact that a parent died, or that, you know, like that people tiptoeing around this thing because people are uncomfortable about someone's hardship and everyone's trying to be respectful.
Yeah.
But that person can feel the pity and the discomfort that this person has around the thing that happened to them. That's just like, yeah, that's life. Like, this bad thing happened to me. I was in a car accident and I'm paralyzed now. And everyone that looks at me,
down,
I can see
like,
in their eyes
right.
how bad they feel for me. And I go to a roast and these people don't give me any.
I love it.
They don't give me any like leeway. They just straight up joke about how my dick doesn't work now.
Right.
And it makes me feel like I'm part of the group again.
And you know what? Hopefully that person wrote great jokes about this guy being fat or something. And like, they can just both just tear each other apart, and it's gonna be triumphant at the end, and like they both feel good about it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that whole world has just kind of, I mean, it's bigger than ever right now.
It's almost every time you see a battle in New York or something, it's like, oh, yeah, his mom is dead. He has no arms. His grandpa, like, killed his whole family.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a reason that all these people that have had horrible things come together.
It seems incredibly healthy.
There's a reason.
Honestly.
Like,
I know that that's what's so interesting is in this culture of people getting mad about things comedians say online, I'm like, yeah, go to a roast battle. It honestly seems
that's the thing. It's like
and healthy to just go, I'm going to completely strip this stuff of all of its power over me, and I'm going to fucking laugh about it. And I'm going to let other people just fucking say whatever they want about it. And it's like, I'm going to take all the power away from it.
Yeah.
And I know that that's up to the person who's experiencing it, whether or not they want that made fun of. Like, I get that, like, some people are just not ready
for
that kind of a thing. But, you know.
Those people are lame.
I mean, I'm
kidding.
One of a thing that you'll find at a lot of AA meetings that I go to is, like, people laugh their asses off at horrible stories.
Yes.
People will tell a story about, like, you know, trying to buy meth in prison and, like, the difficulty of that. And everyone's laughing their asses off.
Oh, well, you know, some people say AA is a great open mic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I've heard.
And there's people that definitely treat it like that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
There's people that get up and they're like, how's everybody doing tonight? So there's, the other day.
There's actually one of my favorite Real Housewives of New York is in AA. And she literally said on camera, like, well, I like to perform at the meetings. And everyone's like, Luann, that is not the point of AA. Like, you're not allowed to say that. And there, everyone knows, like, she just goes and does her little show at the AA meeting.
But got a captive audience.
Yeah. Know? But the thing with Roast Battle is it's so horrible that you can't even try to catch one person saying, there's a freedom in it. Because no one's going to come in there and be like, Drew said this one horrible thing. It's like,
oh my God,
everyone said horrible things. Like, you can't even catch the fish in the water.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so many.
I've been like a little scared about, cause there's like, you know, some roast battles online that I've done. I'm like, well, if I want this job, like, what if they look me up and they find stuff? And that I didn't get this one job recently. And it wasn't in the back of my mind. I'm like, I wonder if they looked me up and it came up. And like, I've definitely said some bad things.
He's like calling women.
But I would love to email them and be like, well, you saw that I won, right?
I mean, you saw that.
Like, yeah,
Friend Davidson has this hilarious joke where he's like, I'm looking for a new job. He's like, here's a tip when you're looking for a job. Don't do 10 high profile on YouTube roasts calling women cunts. Like, right before you start to look out for a job. Like, he's literally just, like, on YouTube, like, Maddie is such a fucking cunt. Like, it's just like, oh, my God. Wait, I actually wanted to tell Austin really quick the story about the girl. I'm not going to say her name, obviously. The Skankfest. Okay, so we have this friend, this girl who we know that does comedy. And she's like, you know, she's fine. She's super nice. Not the funniest person in the world. She's super like queer, trans, like bi, like all this, like, you know, she's definitely like a woke person.
Is she going to hear this?
No.
Good. That you're like, she's not funny.
Yeah. No, and she wouldn't even know was talking about her. So there's this huge festival called Skank Fest, and it's put on by the people that run the Legions of Skank Skanks podcast. Mm-hmm. And they're super like, they're anti-PC to the extreme that it's a joke, but people don't really get it. It's a joke. Like, mm-hmm. people still try to take them down. Like, even like they booked out this huge venue to have this festival. And like after the whole event, after they paid tons of money, people flew in from all over the country to come to Skank Fest. The venue was like, our bartenders were put at a disadvantage by this festival. You know, they like pretended like they were woke. It's like, you took their money, so.
And their bartenders made more that weekend than they did the past 3 months.
Yeah.
And now they're, you know, whatever.
So anyways, it's a whole thing. People just love to attack them. And they are attackable, and they do annoying things. They recently had that guy Milo on their podcast.
Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And like that stuff to me, I'm like, that's not funny. Like, but they just are so like.
And here's where I think we see something like that is where I think you can see the line between comedian and troll blur a little bit. Because Milo's a person too who is a provocateur and like is a person who like intentionally like does stuff like that. And people who have him on sometimes just want to see the PC people freak out.
Totally.
That's funny to them.
Totally.
But that's what they were doing. I don't approve of that.
And I think that that's a little dicey where it's like your intention is to see people like
see people
lose
mad.
Their shit and see
people
mad.
And that's where intention comes
in. Which I still think that's more okay than your intention is to see people kill themselves.
Yeah.
And I still am like, yeah, it's a little bit more gray, like where you're like, we're doing this just to get a rise out of the SJW, you know, PC police. Like, we want it. We don't even like Milo, but we're going to have him on just so that people come and protest us.
Totally.
I can see how that could be funny to people, just to watch people freak out about nothing, you know, but, like yelling fire in a movie. But like, I think a little bit, my personal taste is like, so the joke is, you're saying inflammatory things and then watching people freak out.
Yeah, like that's not like, that's funny. That's like, what's worth it.
That's a weird intent there, where it's like the people who made the OK symbol a white supremacist symbol, and they did it largely as a joke.
Yeah, I didn't know that, by the way, until like recently.
They just started like a big part of it was propagated by people on 4chan and stuff, but they were doing it as a joke, hoping that people on the left would latch onto it and say, like, anytime you see someone doing the OK symbol in a picture, it means white supremacy. And that was funny to them, that they got people to freak out about something not real. But I had talked with a friend about this, and he said something really smart. He goes, yeah, but things mean what we decide as a culture they mean. So if it becomes, if you're saying that this thing you're doing means white supremacy, that's what it means. Even if you're saying it doesn't actually, I'm just joking. It's like, yeah, but you're doing with the intention of getting me to see it thinking that you're a white supremacist. And ha ha ha, now I've tricked you into thinking I'm a Nazi. How stupid are you? It's like, but what's the difference between like pretending to be a Nazi to trick me and just being a Nazi?
Right.
Yeah.
And there is a difference, I should say. But I still am like, I think there's a difference between that person and a comic who's just like, I really was just trying to make you laugh.
Yeah, totally.
I really thought the joke was just funny.
Yeah, okay, you know? So there's this huge festival. It's run by these guys, and it is like a crazy party. I mean, people there look like they came from the swamps, like the hills, but it's like a crazy party. There's
ICP-looking people, but it was legitimately the most fun doing comedy I've ever had.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's crazy. So Friday night at the festival, they had Louis C.K. drop in.
Wow.
And apparently he like really didn't want to. Like, he just came by to hang out, and they were like, Louis, just go up. And
that sounds like a bad move for him.
I agree.
These people who are coming to this festival are exactly the exact kind of people who want to see Louis C.K.
And it was no phones allowed. Like, people were crazy cracking down.
I want to see Louis C.K. go.
Yeah.
But people just
didn't even film it.
Yeah.
There wasn't a no phone like tucked away. Like, people just wanted to see Louis, and
I don't agree. I think people would have gotten in trouble if they had tried to film, or else he wouldn't have gone up. But okay, so anyway, so he performed Friday night. It went like viral. Everyone's like, Louis performs at this horrible festival, all this stuff. The next day, or there was 2 days later, it was Sunday afternoon, and Drew was on a few shows there, so we stopped by to hang out. It's a crazy party. Everyone's partying. I run into this girl that I'm talking about, and I'm like, hey, what's up? She's like, oh my God, so good. She's like blackout drunk. She's like, having the best time of my life, bitch. Like, and I'm like, yes, you're rocking it. And then she goes up and does a set. She's like laughing with the crowd, like going nuts.
It's like
a
huge party.
We hang after. I'm like, oh my God, like, we're like not super, we're not close at all. Like, we would like go to the bathroom together and then like never talk again for like another year. So on Monday, so I see her on Sunday night. I'm like, bye, good to see you. On Monday, I'm on all these women's Facebook groups, and I see she has posted an essay on the women's group. Hi, everyone. I am so embarrassed. I have no idea what to say. I had no idea Louis C.K. was at Skankfest when I was there. He was there Friday. She was partying until 1 a.m. on Sunday, doing her set, talking to everyone.
Yeah. At Skankfest.
Skankfest. Literally. And she posted this long thing, like, really struggling.
She's like, still struggling.
Still struggling with the fact that I had, you know, that I was connected with this festival in any way. Still struggling with the fact that no one told me Louis was there. It went viral. You knew Louis was there Friday night.
That's all people
night.
Were talking about,
Like, or maybe it was Saturday.
It was Saturday.
Every time. And I'm pretty sure I'm not going to put words in her mouth, but I'm pretty sure I was like, oh my God, were you here for Louis? She's like, oh my God, no. But, and then she posts this long, and all these women are commenting like, you're so brave. Like, wow. Like, the fact that you were just like, you know, out there. Like, we all still have to perform. It's like, These guys paid you for a spot. Didn't they pay you like $30 for a spot? Like,
more. I don't even. It's crazy.
It honestly sounds like a good time to be honest.
Oh, it was literally comedy. It was literally 3 days.
She was killing.
Free booze,
she did a huge show. This girl did a huge show in front of tons of people that she never would have gotten the exposure to. She's super hot. Like, people probably, like hit her up after. You know what I mean? You probably got fans from this. Like, they paid you. And you're turning around just to look like a good person.
Right.
And if I saw her, a million other, like, not a million, obviously. Like, at least 10 other women probably saw her and then saw what she put, like... How are you so delusional?
It's like everybody wants to be there for the party, but they also want to look like they're a hero. And it's just like, you can't do both. And like, have some integrity, you know?
Yeah, like, she has no integrity. Like, and after I saw that, I'm like, I know exactly who you are, and I don't trust you.
That leads perfectly into the next thing I wanted to ask you, the have some integrity. What do you think about comics apologizing? About, like, getting called out and then saying, like... Because that's, like, a great example of... Probably no one even called this person out, but she's like...
No one said anything.
People see that he was at the same place I was at. And instantly just goes... I mean, it makes me completely question everything you do, and you just go, I'm so sorry I was even there. I'm so sorry I was seen there. It's like...
But she took no accountability.
Like, be there or don't be there, but also, like, you don't need to apologize. You don't need to apologize for being...
No.
You don't need to apologize for performing at the Comedy Cellar when you know that Louis C.K. used to perform. You don't need to...
Oh, all
you
the...
You don't need to... But so I just wonder what
women.
You think about people who apologize.
And that sucks that women are put in that situation.
My God. Some of my favorite comics are Michelle Wolf and Lisa Traeger, and they said almost every time they leave the Comedy Cellar, a reporter gets up in their face like, why are you performing? It's like, I've worked my whole career to be at the best club in the country.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what Louis C.K. does. Like, I'm here because this is the best club in the country.
Yeah, we said this,
like,
the other night just because Harvey Weinstein exists doesn't mean that every woman should quit show business.
Right.
You know, it's like, how dare you, like,
that's the patriarchy trying to keep us down again.
Why
don't you question the fucking men that are coming in and out and that are friends with Louis and that go to his fucking house and are in his
Jesus
movies?
Christ.
Like, why don't you question them? But
I can't be at a festival that Louis C.K. is at. I can't be at the same...
I can't get paid to do what I do. Like, what about your job?
What about the people who hired him? Talk to them.
What about
Talk
all
to the people who
instructors at Equinox and SoulCycle?
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like... Yeah, so...
But do you think there's circumstances in which comedians should... apologize? Like, take Kevin Hart.
Yes.
He went on, like, an apology tour.
One of the best apologies ever, and I can't believe he didn't still host the Oscars. I really loved his
apology.
Well,
he kind of just, like, backed out at the right time and was like, hey, I made a mistake. But, like, he also kept it pretty brief, which I liked. He just was kind of like, I'm not going to do this. Like, he wasn't, like... He wasn't fighting to host the Oscars, and, like, he wasn't going to take it on face first. He was like, oh, yeah, I fucked up 10 years ago. Well... All right, well, that's enough. See you guys. And I'd like that.
I heard him on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and it was a really good interview where he got a little bit more into it. But it was essentially just a thing of him going like, hey, look, you know, comics take risks, and we try stuff out, and it doesn't always work. And he's like, and I tried out, like, a bit that didn't. And, I like the thing of just being like, it was a bit that didn't work. And that's probably the biggest, like, thing I did wrong was that it just, like, it just didn't work. But also... Fuck me, it was 10 years ago.
Right.
I know,
Like, can you allow me, like, the possibility that I'm a different person from 10 years ago? I sure hope.
And
so.
I'm literally the hardest working person in show business and, like, all this stuff. Yeah, but I actually think Louis C.K.'s apology sucked.
So what do you think is the difference between a Kevin Hart apology and a Louis C.K. apology?
I think Kevin Hart actually realized that he did something that hurt people's feelings and it took accountability. Mm-hmm. And I think Louis C.K. did not accountability.
In which way?
I just think he very much so thought he would, I think Louis C.K. thought he was totally invincible and this was all going to blow over and he could continue to be like a god in his own like world and everyone still respects him. And he didn't think for a second, like this could continue for the rest of your life, you know, and you need to actually apologize and actually do things continue to make steps to be a better person and respect all people.
I mean, absolutely apologize for sexually assaulting someone.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. Uh-huh. But I mean,
the whole apology, just like these women looked up to me. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, for sure. But like, as far as jokes go, it is tough because like, I mean, I apologize when I don't hold the door for someone. Like I'm too apologetic. Anyone who purposely would feel bad about something he said, and really, like, I remember, I think Anthony Jeselnik had a thing when he had his first Comedy Central show. He made a joke, I think I'm getting this right, about the Boston marathon bombing. And it was like, he tweeted it saying like, there are some lines that shouldn't be crossed. And today we learned that was the finish line or something like that. And Comedy Central told him to delete it. And it's like the, but it's really like one of the only stories he ever has in his one special. And it's like the last 20 minutes about how Comedy Central told him to delete the tweet because he was like about promoting a show and had a show on their network.
He had that show.
Offensive. Yeah. And he had made a million jokes about every
tragedy.
Wasn't
his show called Offensive? Is that what
you said? The Jeselnik Offensive.
Yeah, that's really funny.
And he was like notoriously would tweet after every tragedy. And then they told him to take it down. And I remember him saying just through podcasts and stuff, like he was talking to a lot of people and he did apologize for it. And I think, I'm pretty sure now, I mean, that was probably 7 years ago. Now he says like he totally regrets apologizing because he just says like, in a weird way, like you do have to stick to your guns. And because like also for him, he's like more of a character kind of. So it's like that apology even kind of breaks, shows you like it sees, it can see, we can all see through the character, which is like not, it was just totally not his intention for doing comedy. It's like we can actually see the real person and it's like, oh, that's actually, that's not what he ever wants you to see, you know, it's just like see through the character at all. It's like, oh, we're actually getting the real him for once. And it's like, well, if he didn't apologize, he'd be sticking to his guns. But at the same time, you're on a network, you do sign contracts, and you don't want your show.
But people expect people to apologize as though these are deeply held beliefs that these people have.
Right, exactly.
Because I think the thing with the Kevin Hart tweets is when I read them, I thought, are these jokes? Like, it didn't seem like jokes.
I know. His actually weren't
and I was
funny.
Like, and
so
I was kind of like, it just sounds like he just tweeted some homophobic shit.
Right.
It just didn't read. And so maybe that really is just an example where he's like, I was trying to be funny and it didn't work out. And that sort of seemed like what he said was like, it wasn't funny. Whereas like, with Jeselnik, it's like he is known for when there's a tragedy and everyone in the world is mourning it. My role or what I do is I come in and I try to I admittedly say an offensive joke because that's what I do, but it's not what I actually think. It's there to be my contribution, my character's contribution to the conversation, and that's like what Comedy Central hired him for. That's why he had the show.
Right.
But then people can step in and go, yeah, we know that what you know, what you're known for is offensive comedy. We know that that's your strength. We know that that's kind of the whole bit here, but not that one.
Right.
You know, and I get that it's not about sticking to your guns. It's about like, well, am I this character or am I not, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Now that I'm looking back, I know he deleted, I'm pretty sure he apologized, but I know he regrets whether it was deleting or apologizing. He regrets doing what they asked him to do. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, I mean, I don't know what he.
But you can also say that now, but back then you probably weren't getting as many opportunities. You know what I mean?
Like, that's the thing. I mean, you don't want
your
show.
It's like the network
off,
tells
you
to do something. You're like,
you still work for a network.
Hindsight 2020.
So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I apologize for every single thing I do in my life. So.
That's so funny to me that like in real life, I'm apologizing constantly.
Yeah, oh my God.
And then on stage, I'll say, you know, the worst thing I can think of about a person.
I mean, I've had jokes like darker jokes bomb, and like my insides tell me like, sorry, that was too much. And like, and then, but it's like, no, then it's like, no, you should have just ate it and kept going and acted like you meant to say it, you know, instead of just backpedaling and be like, sorry, it got weird there for a second, which I've done. And that makes it even weirder being like, oh, sorry, that got weird for a second. Here's the next thing. It's like, nah, just eat the silence and keep going. And hopefully you can win them back again.
They did something at the show the other night that I really liked that I think maybe is all that needs to happen at shows going forward. I mean, you were talking about the difference of LA and New York, but I don't know if they do this at New York shows. Just at the beginning of the show, the guy who was kind of the roast master for the night just did sort of a trigger warning. He just sort of got up in front of which felt weird to me. I was like, wow, this is weird that this is happening right now. But then I forgot about it. When it was happening, I thought, is this really what we have to do? We have to have a person stand up in front of the audience before a comedy show and go, hey, just so everyone knows in the room, you're going to hear this, 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 and this tonight. Is that okay? And if it's not okay, we invite you to step out now. You know, and it's like sitting there going, do we really have to do this at a comedy show? Is anyone in the audience unaware that we're at a roast battle and they're about, you know, But then
but they
I forgot about it as soon as the comedy started. I forgot that he'd even said that. I thought, and in retrospect, I thought maybe that's all it needs to be for a while is just someone gets up and just not seriously, you know, but just politely and yeah. kind of like lightheartedly just says like, hey, just so everyone knows, we're having a good time tonight. People up here tonight are going to say things about race and about weight and about sexual orientation and about like just about anything you can think of. If there's anything in here that you think you might be triggered by, like, we want to give you the opportunity to step out, like maybe get a refund, you know, like, and just you quickly brush over it.
Did they say they would give refunds?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm putting words in the, but they, yeah. It was no, more totally. Or less a pre-show trigger warning. And I thought, is that all that, it's kind of like putting a sign outside your theater that says this show contains flashing lights in case yeah. anyone has epilepsy in
true.
The audience.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is just be like,
I mean, if you didn't
know
that you were coming to a roast battle, if it's something
I'm sorry to anyone who stumbles into a roast battle.
Like, you don't know, like you just can't even.
Like, I wonder if before that show at the Comedy Cellar, where, Dina,
yeah, Hashim, yeah.
Dina Hashim made that joke about XXXTentacion. I wonder if someone stood up and said, "Hey, just so everyone knows, tonight we're going to be making some pretty off-color jokes." If that, you know, like, I wonder.
But
if,
I don't think her joke was off-color.
Well, I don't think so either. Right.
They
saying,
do that when
I
Louis performs
if,
at the Cellar. They do say you can leave and you can get a full refund you want.
I feel like that's all that needs to happen, right?
Yeah.
Is like, how can you claim to be upset if the theater says, hey, we're letting you know right now,
right.
we're going to be talking about the following topics. And we want, and I feel like that to me seems very modernized and very like respectful. And you don't say it in a way where you go like, hey, if anyone in here is a pussy, you
yeah.
know, it's like you say it in a way where
right.
it's like, it's totally okay if you feel like you're going to be
it's
uncomfortable.
It's like when my mom walked out of Book of Mormon and I'm like, you knew.
Did she?
Yeah.
I thought yes. she loved Book of Mormon.
That's hilarious.
No, my grandma loves
your
Book
mom
of
walked out of Book of Mormon and my parents didn't.
I know.
My Mormon parents stayed. And you, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I watched that show with my dad in Salt Lake when Jaron came through to
yeah.
do it. And shout out Jaron Barney.
Shout out.
And we were both laughing so hard in the audience until like a certain point.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I could feel my dad kind of going, okay.
Okay. Like, this is a lot.
And it is. I mean,
it's a lot.
When you want to talk about offensive comedy, it's like I always give it up to Trey and Matt for
yeah.
like pushing and pushing but and pushing and pushing.
What makes and like Comedy Central let that go by for 20 years?
Trey and Matt
because it's
yeah.
animated, I guess. And
it's animated,
like,
yeah.
What I've loved about Trey and Matt too is like equal opportunity offenders, and really at the end of the day, when I think about Trey and Matt, they fall under the category of those guys just want to make me laugh, and they do.
Yeah.
Like those, and but they're ripping on everybody.
Oh, they hate.
They take everyone.
They're
making
the left,
PC
the right.
Culture.
Yeah.
They're, you know, but it's not with the. I mean, I think that they are in the pool of they know that people are going to watch and get upset and be mad about the jokes that they're making, and they're making fun of you for that as they're making
right.
the jokes, and it's still funny.
And
so maybe the rule is just. God, be clever, be funny.
And they're also topical, which helps them because it's like they're tackling an issue that happened last week. And it's like it's almost like, oh, let's see South Park's take on Jerry Sandusky or something. You're like, and
yeah.
it's but
the whole
you know.
Last season they had a watermark over the screen of their episodes that said hashtag cancel South Park. And the reason
yes.
why they were doing it was just to basically be like, we're gonna beat you all to the punch. Like
right.
Hannah
like,
has that sweatshirt.
We're basically just gonna
really.
She has a sweatshirt that says cancel South Park.
All I'll say is the number one musical in the world for several years, and it's still like just this international
oh,
phenomenon,
right.
is a show that has a song that says fuck you God
in
the ass,
mouth,
and cunt
tinta.
Over and over and over again in it. And it's like one of the most popular musicals like next to Hamilton like ever to exist.
Yeah.
And the fact that like in today's climate that can be a thing, I just kind of go – I guess you just have to be really entertaining and funny.
And people, but
yeah.
people respect theater. A lot of people,
I
don't,
know,
respect,
people don't
comedy.
Respect comedy.
That's the thing. You don't get shit faced and blacked
point.
Out before you, well, I would,
it's
but you
the
don't.
The high art versus the low
that's
art.
That's the thing. People respect the theater.
They
paid $120
they
to go to see this show. They know it's going to be beautiful. They know it's amazing. But like, they don't give a fuck about someone standing up on a stage in front of 40 people. They think they could do it.
Yeah.
And if it's coming from...
It looks easy.
It looks easy, and it's like, oh, I could do this. And then it's that's just the hierarchy of like performance. It's like,
that's such an interesting point. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
That's like making me feel bad as a theater person.
Where no, like, and like
we get away with, because I feel like I'm just plays sometimes that I'm in just like have offensive material, but people will be like, but they're really exploring this idea.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not the actors on stage that think these things. It's the characters that are saying these things. It's like the idea of this kind of a person being explored in this high art form. And we're all kind of leaning in and going, what about that? But when a comic does it, it's like, well, that asshole can't say that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people don't realize that a lot of times you're playing a character. A lot of times you've told the jokes a million times. Like people think it's just right. You talk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like, I mean, I definitely haven't done a lot of shows, you know, throughout the states or anything, but like, you know, different places here and there. And like, it really is like, it almost is more fun kind of circling back. It's like the kind of blue collar attitude of just like, hey man, I just got off work. I'm hitting a comedy show. I'll drink two or three beers and just hit me with some stuff. And like, that's so much more fun to just perform to those kind of like blue collar everyday people than someone who's like comedy. It's like, what? And it's like, but they think they like comedy, and then they're in some Brooklyn coffee shop and it's like, they don't like it at all. You know, they're going there looking for something to be pissed off by.
Yeah.
I feel like, and it's like, no, some guy who just woke up at 5 a.m, just got off on his hands and knees building a house or something. It's like, now he's going to the comic club. Yeah, nothing's really going to piss. That guy's not going to a comedy club to get pissed off.
That's a really interesting point to me, that almost in so many forms of performance, whether it's dance or whether it's even sports or whether it's people aren't in the audience looking for what are they going to say or do that I'm going to go tweet about later.
Right.
And you can almost guarantee that at a comedy club these days, and maybe it's always been like this, there's people who are ready
to be
they're nervous, they're on pins and needles looking for what's the thing that's going to be said or done and I think there's a little bit of that when you go see a show written by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, because even Broadway was like, you're not Broadway people, you're not Stephen Sondheim, you're not Lin-Manuel Miranda, you're not Jason Robert Brown, you're the South Park guys. And but then we'd already been giving them a free pass for so long that, and it was a piece of theater and it was like great songs and great dancing, and you know, but like, and people have come after that show. They've come after that show for being racist. And,
yeah,
or,
totally.
You know, which is kind of the point of the show. But, you know, I think that's a really interesting point, that it's probably a form that that disproportionately
respect.
Has people in the audience kind of on the lookout for.
Right.
What they're going to say that I'm going to, you know. Anyway. Cool. That was good. That was fun. Do you have anything else?
That was so fun.
Was
no,
great.
Thank you, Austin, for having us.
I think we've
really
it out now.
Discovered the problem with comedy, and I think we solved
it.
Three white people and know-how.
Yeah.
What would have happened if you'd never come to Los Angeles for the Brooklyn Comedy Festival?
I don't know. Comedy
you'd
would just
still
have
be out there pissing
failed.
Off Brooklyn comics.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And hey, if that job that didn't hire me is listening, I just want to say, you probably made the right call.
And just this is true. Apologize.
And if that girl,
I'm sorry.
If that girl I talk shit about is listening, I take nothing back.
Do either of you have anything you want to plug? Like your podcast?
Oh, my podcast. Oh, please listen to my podcast, Stayin' Humble with Stu. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. It's really fun. Just a quick pitch. I humble people and celebrities, and no one is safe.
I'm a very big fan of Stayin' Humble with Stu. I'm a big fan. Big time listener.
It's a party.
I've listened to every single episode. I'm probably the number one fan of Stayin' Humble with Stu.
Woo. Maybe the only straight fan.
I really like that. I hope so.
I've said that on the podcast a few times. I'm like, no one listens to straight. And I'm always like, maybe Austin is the only straight person.
I've heard you say that. And I'm like, I hope I'm the only straight fan.
Yeah.
But then I also don't, because I want you to have lots of fans.
Right.
So
true.
Listen to Stayin' Humble with Stu. It's really, really great, really funny. She breaks down celebrity gossip, and she humbles people and herself and her guests. It's really funny. Drew, do you have anything you want to plug? Maybe your comedy show in Ridgewood?
Yeah. So I run a weekly show, if you're ever in New York, on Tuesdays in Ridgewood, Queens, like the Brooklyn of Queens, kind of. But it's fun. It's a nice little dive local bar. Weekly show on Tuesdays. It's called Sweet Nothing Comedy. The bar is Sweet Jane's. Yeah, and otherwise just I'm doing roast battles and trying to do sets in New York City. So if you're ever in the city, come by and heckle me and tell
me
you hate
me. Put these two on your shows.
Yeah.
Hey. You know, I've got friends out in New York. Put these two on your
Follow
shows.
Follow me on Instagram, at Stuart and Chill.
Oh, yeah, at Trev Yanko on Twitter for really stupid jokes. And don't advance search me, but hey, yeah.
All righty. That was great. Thank you, too.
Thank you, Austin.
Thank you, Austin.
Bye-bye. Love the fort.
So that's the conversation. And I don't know. I think I wanted to come off as more open-minded on this topic. Like, maybe I have more to learn. But I definitely have a pretty strong opinion on this whole thing. And I think it really shows. In fact, I feel like you can hear all three of our opinions pretty clearly. We all seem to agree, more or less. Whether we're right or not is obviously still up for debate. But yeah, I personally just can't help but feel that it really does boil down to intent. Is the comedian intending to cause harm or joy? Is the comedian intending to open a channel of discussion on a difficult or complex topic? Or is the comedian just speaking from a place of total ignorance when it comes to the topic's social and cultural weight and inherent seriousness? And it might be that simple. Unless, of course, it isn't. People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original music also by me. You can find more of my music and other projects at austin-archer.com. That's a dash, not a slash. The key next to the zero on your keyboard, austin-archer.com. I'm also on Apple Music and Spotify. I think that's about it. Okay, thanks. Say the things that make everyone okay is a waste. Try to keep it all together like a tightrope.